Listening Library presents Mississippi Trial 1955 by Chris Crow. Read for you by Victor Bavine.
Chapter 1. My dad hates hate. All my life, if the word ever slipped out of my mouth, he'd snap into me faster than a rattlesnake. "Hiram," he'd say, straightening up like a preacher, "the world's got plenty enough hate without you adding to it. I will not tolerate such language or even such thinking in my home or in my family." He'd go on with his sermon for too long, 5 minutes or more, preaching about the evils of hate and reminding me how hate had hurt folks back in our old home, the Mississippi Delta. Then he'd march me up to the bathroom and give my tongue a slathering of Lifebuoy soap. I can't tell you which was worse, the sermons or the soap, but I will tell you this. I hated Dad when he acted like that. Like some kind of born-again crusader out to protect everybody's right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. By the time I turned 16 last July, I'd had it with Dad's sermons and weirdness about hate, racism, equal rights, and all that. Funny thing was, the more he preached about hate, the madder it made me. Never told him to his face, of course. It wouldn't have been worth it. But I let him know in a thousand ways that I'd just as soon live in the Arizona desert with Gila monsters and tarantulas than spend any time with him. But a few months ago, the summer of 1955, lots of stuff happened. Stuff I never would have imagined. It was strange, but you know how sometimes when you get what you think you always wanted, it turns out to be nothing like you expected? That happened to me when I was back in Greenwood, Mississippi last summer. Some awful things happened to a Negro kid named Emmett Till, and I was right in the middle of it, smack in the heart of crazy, senseless hatred. And you know what? When it was all over, I started seeing Dad and lots of people a whole lot different than ever before. I first started butting heads with Dad in 1948. I was only 9. Because he dragged us away from Mississippi. Dad and his dad, Grandpa Hilburn, got along about as well as Hitler and Roosevelt. Spend any time with the two of them in the same room, and you'd figure that World War II hadn't ended yet. The problem was that while Dad was away fighting Japanese in the Pacific, and Mom was working for the war effort, Grandma and Grandpa Hilburn raised me. They spoiled me pretty good, I guess. But as a little kid, I liked the spoiling, and I loved my grandparents. And their big old house. And Greenwood, Mississippi. Dad came home from the war, took one look at how tight I was with Grandpa, another look at the South he hated, and used the GI Bill to go up to Ole Miss to get a master's degree in English, so he could land a college teaching job out west, far away from Grandpa. From Mississippi, from racism and prejudice, from hate. Mom and Dad lived in a shoebox-size apartment up there, so while Dad studied and Mom worked at Oxford Elementary School, they let me stay with Grandma and Grandpa for the 2 years it took Dad to finish school. Looking back on it now, I can see how lots of things that happened when I used to live in Greenwood stacked up to set the stage for all the horrible stuff that took place last summer. I still remember being a little kid in Greenwood. I spent nearly all my time with Grandpa, and we had a regular routine. After breakfast, we'd walk down to the LaFleur County Courthouse so Grandpa could do a little business. That usually meant he'd stroll into someone's office, pull up a chair, and visit. Usually, before he'd even sit down, he'd fish in his pocket for a nickel, hand it to me, and say, "Hiram, Mr. Harton and I have some serious business to tend to for the next little while. Why don't you run down to the lobby and see what Mr. Paul's got for sale today?" Funny how you remember some days more than others, but I still remember one summer morning there. With the nickel in my fist, I left Mr. Harton's office and headed straight for the glass cases and counters in the center hallway of the courthouse. Hey, Mr. Paul, it's me, Hiram Hilburn. Little Hiram, how's the world treating you this morning? Mr. Paul turned to face me, smiling with his hands flat on the glass countertops. He looked about my dad's age, and I know he'd been in the war, too. His army truck hit a landmine in France, and he ended up blind. Dark glasses hit his eyes. Grandpa gave me a nickel. That right. Nobody can say old Earl Hilburn doesn't know how to occupy his grandchild. What'll it be today, Hiram? I walked up to the glass display cases and looked over the rows of gum and candy bars laid out on the shelves. Behind the counter, Mr. Paul kept an ice chest full of soda, and on the right side of the display case, he kept a cooler filled with ice cream bars. It was a hard decision. I've got some cold Coca-Cola back here, he said. But I know you like those Eskimo pies, too. This particular morning was cooler than most summer mornings had been, so I had my eye on something else. Could I please have a Hershey's bar, Mr. Paul? Keeping his head upright, he reached carefully into the display case and felt around until his hand found the dark brown Hershey's bars. He set one on the counter. That'll be 5 cents. I snapped my nickel flat on the glass top. Mr. Paul felt for it, picked it up, and dropped it into the cigar box he kept on a shelf behind him. Pleasure doing business with you, Hiram. What big things do you and your grandpa have planned for today? Don't know, sir. I peeled the wrapper off my chocolate bar and broke off a section. He'll probably be talking in there with Mr. Harden for a while longer. Then we'll go out to the fields and work some before lunch. Mr. Paul grinned. Work? You mean your grandpa will drive out there and watch those boys sweating in his fields while he sits in his truck drinking lemonade and reading the paper? I'd surely like to get some of that kind of work for myself. A man approached the counter, and hearing him, Mr. Paul said, Well, I've got to get back to business. You have yourself a good day, Hiram, and stay out of the way of that busy grandpa of yours. I meandered down the marble hallway and out the main courthouse doors. A huge magnolia tree shaded the front of the building, and I walked under the tree and pulled myself up into its lowest branches, resting comfortably in a shady nook to enjoy my candy bar and wait for Grandpa. When Grandpa came out of the courthouse, we walked back home, got into his pickup, and drove north of Greenwood for a few miles on Old Money Road, past flat, wide fields furrowed with dark green cotton plants. Once we got to his fields, Grandpa parked the truck and turned me loose while he talked with the workers and looked over the crops. I wandered up and down the cotton rows, looking for arrowheads or lost tools or anything I could find in the furrows. Grandpa always rewarded me with a nickel when I found something. I liked exploring the rows of plants. They offered some shade from the Mississippi sun, and if the wind blew even a little, the plants swayed and stirred up air that seemed almost cool. When Grandpa was done in one part of the field, he'd whistle for me and we'd drive to the next section. The only person he ever talked to was the field boss, Mr. Irwin, a red-faced man who wore dark green coveralls. Grandpa talked to him, and then Mr. Irwin told the field hands whatever it was Grandpa wanted them to do. They were all colored men. I never saw a white man work in Grandpa's fields. I hadn't found anything worth a nickel to Grandpa, so I followed some of the Negro workers into the rows while they chopped cotton. One man noticed me following behind and turned to talk to me.
You Mr. Hilburn's grandchild, ain't you?
I didn't answer. I was 7 years old, and he looked as old as Grandpa and taller. I'd hardly ever talked to a Negro man before, and I was scared. He smiled and patted me on the head.
It's okay, little Mr. Hilburn. I was wondering why you're following me.
His deep, gentle voice relaxed me. Just watching, I said cautiously. You're chopping those weeds pretty fast.
Got to, little man. This whole field needs chopping today, and if we don't finish it, it's going to be added to tomorrow's work. And if that happens, we ain't never going to go home tomorrow. And, son, I can't stand the thought of working in this field both day and night.
I can help. Sometimes I help Grandma in the garden. She says I'm a good worker.
Bet you are. I bet you are.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?